All right, joining us from CSN Bay Area, he's had another MVP season. That is Alex Pavlovich. Alex, good morning.
Hey, Marty.
Well, good morning to you. That's a very good. That's a very good. Good morning for you on a Sunday morning. I like that. Very good.
I'm wide awake today.
I see that. I see. Well, first of all, great columns yesterday on the game of Hudson and Zito. Didn't live up to the hype, but certainly the pomp and circumstance lived up to it. The pregame, the jerseys, the fan ovations. Tell us what you saw on that angle.
Yeah, you know, I said this on TV all week, and I argued with some people on Twitter who kind of didn't want to see this one happen. I think, you know, anybody who grew up in the Bay Area or grew up with either one of those teams, I don't think it matters which team you grew up rooting for. I grew up in the Bay Area, and I used to go to A's games on Wednesdays because it was the dollar, and you could get $1 hot dogs, and I used to go watch those two. So I think to have them out there and to have Mark Mulder there was just a really cool moment, and it was something that even if it didn't kind of turn out the way they wanted it to, it was a day that for the first few hours was all about those two, and it was a loud environment there, and the fans were in their seats early. It really was in a weird way. I was down on the field before the game doing kind of one last TV thing, and I'm looking around. It was kind of like a playoff game in a way, just with how many people were in their seats 20 minutes before first pitch, and they were rooting when Hudson got out there, and then when Zito got out there, he got a standing ovation. I just thought it was a really cool day, and hopefully, you know, people stuck around after those two departed and kind of got their last ovations, because then you went and saw Jarrett Parker kind of have a historic day. So I think overall, from start to finish, it really was one of the cooler days you'll ever see from two teams that really aren't kind of going anywhere beyond this.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Good description of that, because it's one of those days, you know, and we had callers last night of parents who took children to the game, and you know, it's one of those games in 10 years when you go back and say, you know, you remember that Hudson Zito game? And, oh, yeah, but boy, they got knocked out. And remember what happened after that? And it's one of those bonding experiences. And Ann Killian wrote a beautiful story this morning, I thought, about the day and talked about the romanticism of baseball, the nostalgia of baseball. Baseball does it better than any other. And I commend Zito, really. And I want to get your thoughts about this. I mean, here's a guy that only pitched one inning in a couple of months, and still with a smile on his face, with as much bravado as he had, just said, here I come, I'm coming out there to pitch, and I commend him for doing that.
Yeah, you know, I've written this story before, but my first year in 2012, at the end of spring training there, I didn't realize that people kind of pack it up the last day of spring training, and everybody, nobody really comes to the park, and nobody really is in the clubhouse anymore. So I went out there in the morning, and the only person, the only player in the park was Barry Zito, and the only other people were Mark Gardner and Dave Rigetti. And Gardner and Rigetti were wearing their suits because they were going to fly home right after that. And Zito was out there on the bullpen mound trying to figure out how to be a pitcher again. He had nothing. That whole spring was getting knocked around, couldn't even get through two or three innings. So, you know, this was 2012. The end of March there, and I think it looked like he was done. It looked like his career was over, and of course he goes out and first start at Coors Field, throws a shutout, and then later that year we saw what he did in St. Louis and in the World Series, and to be out there 3 years later and still be on a big league mound, I mean, I thought in March of 2012 his career was over, so it was pretty incredible yesterday, even seeing him out there, and you know, it was kind of a rough day for him at times, but at other times, you did see that curveball. He threw a really good one to Jarrett Parker and then threw a fastball, and we saw what happened. But I just thought for him, it kind of shows you how much he loves the game. And even despite all the money he got, he was still out there just because he wants to play baseball.
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. And just his personality and his upbeat look at the day and being there with Hudson. It really was a day to remember, and that's what baseball is made for. So I'm glad you wrote about it. I'm glad you had the same feeling that I think I had and 36,000 fans had out there and then probably a million watching it on TV yesterday. Well, how about Jarrett Parker? Give us some perspective. I mean, honestly, I know they're all fastballs, and I know it's September, but I had him on in June, and we played a couple of the clips last night, and I reminded him of all the power he had that we saw in spring training. This is legitimate power. How is this going to translate into the San Francisco Giants?
Well, there are two sides here. I think, first of all, you know, a lot of fans kind of need to pump the brakes a little bit. And, you know, people want to put him in left field on opening day next year. Some people I saw yesterday want to put him in center field on opening day. I think you have to remember this is a guy who struck out 37% of the time in the minor leagues this year. And also, you know, the Giants didn't see enough from him to call him up in the beginning of September when they really needed reinforcements. So there are flaws there, and we have seen he's being aggressive early in the count and he's taking advantage of fastballs. I think eventually, you know, the scouting report will get around. He hit 3 fastballs yesterday. At some point, guys are going to stop throwing him first pitch fastballs because that's just going to get around. That's going to be the report on him. But, you know, on the other hand, this is a guy with more power than just about anybody we've seen, and we saw it the night before. The ball he hit was ridiculous, and you saw it yesterday. I mean, he hit one out to left field. He hits one off a lefty. Then he hits the grand slam. So just really, the power is there. The tools are there. I was going back today. Somebody on Twitter sent me the story from the day he got called up, when he got called up with Matt Dusty last year. And Brian Sabin at the time, he told us, you know, he's a borderline 5-tool player. So it's a guy who has a ton of talent and just a ton of power if he can harness it. And I think he has the right approach now. And he kind of figured out from that first cameo he had in June when he went 1-for-9 and struck out a lot, kind of figured out he needs to be more aggressive. So I do think you'll see more strikeouts from him, and the average is never going to be that high. But, you know, look at this lineup. When they're right, they have a lot of guys who are going to grind you out and a lot of guys who are going to hit 300. They have Duffy and Joe Panik and Buster Posey and not a lot of guys who have the kind of power he has. So I think you're looking at next year, and he could be an intriguing guy if you put him down in the 7 or 8 spot and say, look, don't worry about the strikeouts. Just go out there and hit home runs. I mean, he's capable of doing that, and he's capable of hitting quite a few for these guys.
Well, interesting, yeah. And I got the same kind of tweets and phone calls last night on the show that you just described. So it's September. The power is there. As I've said, you know, we saw it in spring training with the big home run hit over the batter's eye down at Scottsdale. I'll never forget that one. So let's see what happens with him. The other one I want to talk about is Chris Heston. And, you know, you talk about rookies of the year and Matt Duffy in a great class is going to be right up there with Chris Bryant. But Chris Heston, Alex, he's thrown 169 innings. He came up out of nowhere in that first week of the season. And I know he's going 4 2/3, 5, and, you know, hasn't gone much past that in his last 9 starts. But this guy has really given the Giants a boost this year, and I don't want to overlook him. Do you consider him in the rotation next year? How do you assess his first year, really a rookie year in the big leagues?
I think he's in the rotation because I'm more pessimistic than most fans. I know everybody wants him to go out there and get 2 starters. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I don't think it's a lack of effort. I just think you look around the league and all the teams that are going to need starters, and you know, it's going to be hard for anybody to go out and get 2 of those marquee guys this offseason. So I think they'll get 1. I think they'll bring somebody back. Maybe it's Mike Leake, and they go that way. But after that, you know, it's not going to be David Price and Jordan Zimmerman walking through that door. So I think you have to look at who's going to be in that rotation. And Chris Heston has proven himself. And it's been a rough kind of finish for him here, but the stuff is still there. And he still has the ability to go out there and get strikeouts when he needs it. I think he could probably use an offseason to kind of clear his head and just get over everything that happened. I mean, this is a guy who was supposed to start opening day for the Rivercats and instead was in the rotation and, you know, throwing a no-hitter in New York and kind of was leading these guys for 2 or 3 months. It was him and Bumgarner just keeping them afloat. So I think he could use some time to kind of get a breather, go on vacation somewhere and take stock of everything that's happened and get ready for next year. But I'm encouraged by what I've seen in September. I know the outings have been short, but a lot of that has been because Bruce Bochy has kind of, you know, been a little quick with him to pull him out of some of these games in the 4th or 5th. I think the stuff is still good. And if he comes back next spring and makes a few adjustments and works on maybe getting ahead of guys a little bit faster and starting games off a little bit better, the first inning has been an issue for him. But, you know, it's not like there are glaring issues there for him. I think it's just a couple things he needs to fix. And you have a pretty dependable guy who goes out there in deep innings and works quickly and has the ability to strike guys out. At the major league minimum, that's pretty intriguing.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. 169 innings going into today. And you want to see a starter 180, you know, something like that, 190 if you can. So 61 walks, 135 strikeouts, 14 homers, 11 solos. You know, there are numbers there, like you say. There's enough there for me to commend him for coming up. As you say, he was going to start with Sacramento and stepping in that first week of the season, I think doing a good job. So I don't want to overlook him because we talk about Duffy and the Chris Bryant race and all that, and Duffy's been outstanding. But this kid has something to be proud of this year. I think he really does. The other thing I was thinking about, and you wrote a beautiful story about it the other day, and we were in the clubhouse and just talking about all the one-run losses that this team had. And is it the story of this year, the injuries and the one-run losses, if you could pinpoint a couple of things?
Yeah, I think so. You know, in general, I'm not big about talking about injuries because I think you look around the league and, I mean, look at what St. Louis has done, and they're still losing guys. You know, they just lost Martinez, so they lost Matt Carpenter yesterday. So these things happen, and I think people have underestimated what the Dodgers have done. They basically have gotten as much out of Puig as the Giants have gotten out of Pence, and, you know, they lost their 3 and 4 starters pretty much for the year. Everybody forgets how good Ryu was last year, and they haven't gotten anything out of him. So I don't like talking about injuries that much, but I will say in this respect that when you look at the fact that they've lost, 14 out of 15 one-run games here, and the fact that they're still technically alive, I mean, if you swing 3 or 4 of those games their way, all of a sudden it's really interesting next week when the Dodgers come into town. And you know, it would have made a difference having Joe Panik, having Brandon Crawford healthy at the end of August and early September, having Hunter Pence, just having one or two more guys out there, it would have made a difference, and it would have kind of – some of these 4-3 losses, I think they would have been wins. And we saw a lot of games, especially on that road trip in St. Louis and Pittsburgh, and when they went to Los Angeles, losing those close games there. Those were all games that I think, you know, you just needed one or two more guys that they didn't have. So certainly that's a big part of the season, a big story of the season. It's going to be blamed, I think, for a lot of why the season went the way it did. And, you know, and you look at the last month and a half, and they were just shorthanded.
Is there an explanation for the concussions, the number of concussions? Is their threshold lower than other teams? But my goodness, it seems every time you turn around, you know, the injury, what happened to him? Well, he had a concussion. How do you explain this?
Well, I'm going to credit Dave Greschner, first of all. I know it frustrates fans, but if anybody has paid attention to what's happened in the NFL the last decade or so and kind of what's happened to guys who have CTE and have had issues years after having concussions, I think the one thing we've learned is that you always have to err on the side of caution when you have a brain injury. And, you know, I've seen some of these guys who are concussed in the clubhouse. It's not a good look. I mean, they don't look right, and they don't look like they should even be out of bed. So I think, you know, people have to remember we're dealing with brain injuries here, and even one concussion can be hard later on in your life. So I'm going to credit the Giants for being proactive. Maybe they're a little bit more proactive than other teams. Maybe they're a little bit more careful, but they're doing the right thing with guys who have brain injuries. I don't think that's kind of an issue here. When you look at how many they've had, I think that's just bad luck. It's just something fluky. And we've seen with other teams, we've seen other guys get concussed here and there, and we're certainly more aware of it than we've been in the past. And you're going to see more and more guys go on that concussion DL down the line. I just think people have to be more careful in the future. It just so happens that this season for the Giants has kind of been, you know, the year of the oblique and the year of the concussion, and it's just two random things that have kind of, you know, melded together here. I think, you know, on a positive note, it's not the year of Tommy John or torn Achilles tendons or anything like that. So these are two things that have been annoying and have kept a lot of guys out of the lineup, but ultimately they're not anything that's going to keep these guys from competing next year.
All right, Alex Pavlovich is with us, MVP again this year from CSN. Yeah, come on, I always give you a title. CSN Bay Area, he was Rookie of the Year.
I'm glad I'm not a rookie anymore.
Well, you're Rookie of the Year, Sophomore of the Year, and then all of a sudden you took off. But we're thrilled to have you on. Believe me, we're always happy to have you on. So I said today, you know, Giants win today or the Dodgers lose today, either way. Tomorrow becomes a game, and, you know, it's at AT&T. The pitching is set up. They got to beat you to get the division. I like it. I think it's a good storyline.
Yeah, I know fans really don't want to see the Dodgers clinch at AT&T Park. And,
okay.
And it looks like there's a pretty good shot that it happens unless these guys go out and take 4 from them. But on the other hand, we've talked to some pitchers down there. And Jake Peavy, I know he wanted that start against the Dodgers to matter. And even though it's not going to propel the Giants into the playoffs, he still might have a shot to kind of, you know, push this thing back one more day and go out there and keep the Dodgers from celebrating. And I know Baumgartner feels the same way. He's looking forward to that matchup with Kershaw. So it should still be fun if they're, you know, if things don't go south today, and if the race isn't over today, I think the Giants are going to try to push this one back as long as they can. You look at the numbers, you understand that you have to win every game the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. They have to lose every game for this to actually happen, but you know, it could be a chance for them to kind of get a little victory at the end of the year here and at least push this back 4 or 5 more days.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is it. You know, maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe I'm not going to be, you know, Donald Trump's running mate. You know, maybe that's not going to happen. But, you know, but it's baseball. And you know that. It's baseball. And again, if there's something on the line, and what made this race different was the fact that 4 games were going to be head-to-head in September. All these other teams didn't have that kind of, you know, chasing teams. They didn't have quite that for the last week, and that's what kept the Giants' hopes alive. And here it is. So make it count. That's what I say.
Yeah, you know, I'll give them this. They're basically sending the Sacramento Rivercats out there, you know, every other night, and they've assured that the Dodgers will be the last team in the National League to clinch. You know, so they pushed us back as far as they possibly can and made this race as long as they possibly could. So at the very least, you know, that's something I think to build off of, especially for the younger guys. And it's another chance for guys like Parker, guys like Mac Williamson. You know, it's going to be a good experience for them. I think having that Dodgers-Giants series at the end of September, that's only going to help them down the line.
Yeah, I hope it happens. We'll see. You know, you never know. But I'm rooting for it today. You've been terrific on the Marlon Byrd countdown of plate appearances to the vesting option. Some people say, and Henry's going to be on with us at 10:30 today, and Henry's opinion is just pick up the option anyway. These guys are hard to find. What do you think's going to happen with Marlon Byrd?
You know, I really don't know. I thought all along they would find a way to kind of make sure he fell short, but he's getting up there. I think he got 5 more yesterday and certainly did his part. Getting the Barry Zito early to make sure the Giants send a bunch of guys to the plate. So it's getting interesting there. It's getting harder and harder, especially if these Dodgers games count. They're going to send him out there. They're going to have him in right field. So it is getting to be more of a race, I think, than we anticipated. So I really can't tell you what's going to happen. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world, I think, to have that guy on your team next year and to have that guy as your left fielder. And maybe you have him and Parker and Mac Williamson, Gregor Blanco, these guys all forming some sort of, you know, left field and backing up Hunter Pence and backing up Angel Pagan and giving them some power bats off the bench. Maybe that's what you do next year. I don't think that's an issue. It does limit your flexibility a little bit, and that's why I thought this was never going to happen. But maybe they don't care that much. So we'll see. I think the next week we'll know. We'll have a pretty good idea the day they get eliminated, assuming it happens in the next 3 or 4 days. When we see the next day's lineup, we'll have a pretty good idea of what they intend to do with Marlon Byrd.
Well, that'll be interesting. Byrd, Blanco, Williamson, and Parker. Lawyers you like. All right. I could see Dave Fleming doing the commercial right now. All right, Alex, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the day, and you've done a great job, and I appreciate having you on.
Okay, Marty. Take care.
All right, that is Alex Pavlovich of CSN Bay Area. More coming up right here, KNBR 680, the sports leader.